Today's daf from Masechet Erevin is daf Pei Beit, and we're holding at the beginning of the Halakha Perek. We finished Chalon, and we're starting with Ketzad Mishtatfim. So we've talked about the Inyonim of Shituf, of an Erev Shituf, of a Mavoi. What about the Shiur of the food that we're talking about for the Tchum? And when it comes to Tchumim, you actually, because remember, Tchumim are different than the idea of integrating everybody. And because of that, it's a very personalized thing, and therefore the shear of the Euchlim for the Tchumim has to be sufficient for each individual that is going to end up in utilizing this Erev, as opposed to just being a member of a group. We said yesterday, once you've got enough people there, you don't need to worry about like each individual. So that's our question today. How do you make a Ruvei Tchumim where you want to make it for anyone that would wish to use it? So that is the question. How much food would you have to put there? How would you be able to be mezakeh them? How would you be able to get their reshus, and so on and so forth? So is there any, like, simple way of doing this? Yeah, there is. You could be meniach at a chavit. So you could put down your food at the place where there's this Erev, and you believe that a lot of people are going to want to be going tomorrow to the big event. Some Talmud Chochem is giving a drosha. There's a bris in an adjoining town, which is outside of the Tchum, so you need an Erev. So what you do is, you want to be mezakeh everybody. So you put your barrel of food, by the way, barrel of food, the Tosfos points out that barrel usually is used for, in English, we would use the word barrel for a liquid. But he brings all over in the Gemara that we talk about the barrel just being the sense of the large container, even for a solid. We talk about a barrel of grogrot and so on. So it just means it's not necessarily implying mashkin, definitely not. So you put down the barrel of food, and he says, I want this to be available, l'chol b'nei iri, and he's mezakeh it to them, because you would have to do that based on the Gemara we had before. And then you say, for anybody who wants to participate in going to the Beit HaAvel or going to the Beit HaMishteh, and he wants to go there tomorrow, anybody who is mekabel alav mi ba'od yom. Now, obviously, we know that you have to be signing your consent form, so to speak. You have to be giving your das that this is where you want your mokam of shvisa. So you say when you place it down that anybody who wants to be in this mokum for his mokum shvisa, she'd be able to walk in the other direction. He would be kaina as long as he accepts it on himself during the daytime, so that the Erev was chal in the day. You can't make an Erev once it's already Shabbos. And therefore, misha techshach, but if he make, it sounds like if he makes up his mind only after it's already Shabbos, then it's too late. You cannot make an Erev once it's already Shabbos. Omer of Yosef, look, you got to know something. Be medayik from the Mishnah here. Ein ma'arvin ela d'dvar mitzvah. If you're going to make an Erev, you can't just make an Erev for convenience. You have to make an Erev for something that is a dvar mitzvah. And that seems to be the implications of the Mishnah. Says the Gemara, yeah, it certainly is. It's so much the implications of the Mishnah. Why does Rabbi Yosef have to teach us a halacha that is clear in the Mishnah? Tanina, neko mishi elech lebeta avelo lebeta mishteh. I mean, why would the Mishnah have mentioned dafka things like that? Anybody who wants to go to a beis avel or wants to go to a wedding, I mean, that is obviously a mitzvah. And so because of that, it implies that that's where it's limited to. No, Mao de Tema, if Rabbi Yosef didn't tell you, you might have thought that Urcha de Milta Katani. That, okay, the Mishnah is talking about normal things. In other words, normally people make an Erev for something important like that. Therefore, Kamashmalanda, no, it's not that it's the norm, it's that it's the only. And you cannot make an Erev for other purposes. Now, from Rashi, the Mashmaut, not the Mashmaut, he says, Beferish. It's not just you can't make the Erev for other purposes, is that you can't go out of the Tchum with an Erev for other purposes, which is a big difference. Because La Halacha, and in terms of how to understand the Sugya, almost everybody agrees, all the Rishonim, that you can't make the Erev if it isn't for a Tzarech Mitzvah. But if an Erev exists, you can use it for anything you wish. Not like Rashi, you cannot make use of an Erev to leave the Tchum, if it isn't a Dvar Mitzvah. So that's taking it too far. And therefore, if the Erev exists, it would still be a good Erev. All right. Now, the next thing that we say in the Mishnah is, if you accepted that Erev and it's still daytime, so then you get to use that Erev, which is mashma, that if you accepted the Erev after date, let's say that you said, look, you know, I got to speak to my wife and see if she wants to go out tomorrow. You don't get a chance to speak to your wife until it's already after dark, right? Then you discover, yeah, your wife was definitely planning to go, so that we want to use the Erev. Now, isn't that a classical case of Brera? Like, those were the issues that we had with Brera before. If it turns out that the Chacham comes this direction or the Chacham comes that direction. So you, when you find out, that's when we say retroactively the Erev would be Chal. And then the Gemara said earlier, who is the man, the armor that doesn't hold of Brera, even in a Drabbanan? We were talking about the Erev. Isn't the norm to be accepting of the halacha of Brera? And therefore, why would the Mishnah make a blanket statement? If you make up your mind after it's dark, it's too late, buddy. You should have asked your wife before. So does that make sense? That ain't Brera, even in the Rabbanan? Because Iyesh Brera, how do you explain the fact that the Mishnah says it's too late? Tigoli miltul abafreya demi ba'od yom avinechalei. Why don't we say that when you find out, that then it means retroactively that this Eruv was there to be used by you. The fact that the Mishnah says you can't do that means that we don't hold a Brera. Amravashi, that depends how you read the Mishnah. Suppose we understand the Mishnah not as talking about Miba Odyom in the person's agreement, but rather Miba Odyom in terms of his finding out. So the people who made the Erev, did they get the message to him, Miba Odyom? So then it's okay, even if he decides later. But if he didn't get the message, what are you going to say? It's clear retroactively that his das was to use the Erev. What Erev? He didn't even know there was an Erev. So how could his das be to use that Erev? Therefore, in that case, of course, Brera would not apply. Amar Rav Asi. Now, the question is like this. We've been assuming all along that an Erev definitely requires the das of the individual who is going to be going out of the tchum. Now, let's imagine a situation where we're talking about an infant, right? And it's yontav. You want to go out of the tchum on yontav, you want to carry the baby in a backpack with you, okay? Are you supposed to ask the baby to sign the consent form? I mean, how exactly is that supposed to work? Obviously, your dependents, if they're truly dependent, are going to be bottled to your tchum or wherever you're going to walk. So if mommy is going out to the wedding, then mommy takes the baby without getting a consent form from the baby. How long does that go on for? In other words, how old can a child be before we need to make him actively involved in the Erev? So Rav Asi says, even a katan ben sheish, even a six-year-old, some learn it means a six-year-old, some learn it means in his sixth year. That already is a general question, how we use this. It's a machlokas, basically. I have to rely on this among the poskim as well. So let's assume it means a six-year-old, because it keeps the sugya easier for us to discuss. So even a six-year-old can be yotze with his mother's Erev. So he's considered to be a dependent. But older than that, he's no longer a dependent. And then basically you're mechuyev because of chinuch to get his consent, because now he has to learn what it means that there's a tchum and that there's such a thing as a mitzvah of Erev and so on and so forth. Meisve, how can you say that a katan who is 6 years old is able to be dependent on his mother's Erev? We have a braita that says that the definition of the katan, who is yotze be Erev Imo, is a dependent, literally dependent. He's psychologically dependent. And he's a katan shetzorichli Imo. He is psychologically dependent on his mother. And because of that, he can be yotze with his mother. But once he's not dependent on his mother, she'eno tzorichli Imo, ein yotze be Erev Imo, and at that point, you need to make an Erev for him. Now, I know what you're going to tell me. Okay, so what does that have to do with the issue? That's exactly what Rav Asi meant. Rav Asi was saying that as long as he's not older than six, then he is actually still called a dependent, right? Wrong. because of the issue by Sukkah. Because the Mishnah in Sukkah uses exactly that language to define who is supposed to be mechunach in the Sukkah. So tnan nami gabi Sukkah kagavna. Only a katan who is not dependent on mommy is in need of chinuch for a Sukkah. So the father has to bring him into the Sukkah. But if he needs mommy, then he can't go out to a Sukkah because that's not the teshuva kain taduro. Now, in the Mishnah over there, we actually ask, right, what would be in the Gemara, and we ask what the Mishnah would mean about that, what is defined as a katan shein tzarich la'imo. And when you see this definition, you will understand that there's no way to believe in Rav Asi Shir of 6 years old. Because the Rabbi Yonai says, the Shir is kol shenifna ve'enimo mikanachto. The Shir is a child who uses the bathroom and does not need his mother to clean him. And Rav Shlokish says it means any child who wakes up and doesn't start crying, mommy. Now, wait a minute. What do you mean doesn't start crying, mommy? I mean, to say mommy when you wake up? I mean, a nine-year-old could say mommy when he wakes up. What do you mean, ima? Gedolim nami koro. I mean, that's just like a psychological thing that could go on for quite a while. No, I mean, kol shenayor mishnato v'enu kore, ima, ima, meaning that he doesn't keep crying until he gets mommy. It may well be that he wakes up and it's the sudden shock of waking up puts him back into an infantile mode, but he's not going to keep crying until mommy comes and takes him. Now, that is certainly not a six-year-old, for heaven's sakes. Not either of those shiurim are a six-year-old. And, in fact, the Gemara over there says beferish. So, okay, so what would that be approximately? Obviously, it depends on the child. Vikama would be about a four-year-old, a five-year-old, depending on how developed he is, but certainly not a six-year-old. So then that means Rav Asi makes no sense. I mean, Rav Asi is a six-year-old over here. It says once he's over five, then for sure he's not considered to be. And that means Rav Asi is definitely off over here because we use the same definition, Tzorech Le'imo. Amar of Yeshua Beredet, let me explain to you what's going on over here. We're not talking about Rav Asi, of course, agrees that the Shir is 4 or 5. He was not talking about whether you need him to give his consent. That wasn't the question. The question was, Kikamar Rav Asi, in a case where an Erev was specifically made for him, not that he is part of the mother's Erev and doesn't even need an Erev. Now, let's make sure we understand this. There's a big difference between needing consent for an Erev that's made for you, or not needing an Erev at all, right? I mean, we have three Madregas over here. We have the Madrega of the child simply being an extension of the mother. And therefore, if the mother goes out of the tchum, the child goes out of the tchum. We have another stage in which a parent makes the Erev for the child. That doesn't mean that he has to agree, because I'm telling you, buddy, you're coming. But you need to make an Erev for him, because that's part of the chinuch. So therefore, the child now is aware of the need of an Erev. And then we have the third darga, in which the person has to give his own consent, and what he feels is what defines the kashrus of the Erev. Now, you're confusing this whole thing. Says Rabbi Yeshua, you don't understand. That's Rav Asi wasn't talking about not making an Erev. Rav Asi was talking about where you made the Erev. The child is over five, so he needed an Erev. You made the Erev. Problem was that both parents made the Erev. But it's not a very happy family. One parent made the Erev to the north and one parent made the Erev to the south. So mommy wants to drag baby or little child to the Sheva Brachas. And daddy wants to drag the child to the Shir or to the Shul. And they're on opposite sides. They both made an Erev. Now the question is, that's all that Rav Asi was saying. All that Rav Asi is saying is, that in a case where the father made Erev Alav Aviv Litzafon, and the mother makes an Erev Lidaron, but there is an Erev. So all that he was saying is that even if he's 6 years old, he prefers the company of mommy. And therefore, it makes sense that the Erev that would affect him would be the one that his mother makes. That's what Rav Asi was talking about. He wasn't even suggesting that you don't need an Erev at all. Says the Gemara, whoa, that is a total different way of understanding it. It doesn't make any sense from the Braita. Take a look at the Braita. The Braita says like this. If the katan is a tzarich le'imo, so he's a complete dependent, so then he doesn't need an Erev at all. he makes an Erev up to the six-year-old. So then that means that even up to being 6 years old, he is included in his mother's Erev. Not like you explained, Rav Asi. Here it's saying that actually you can be included. So forget it. Tiyufta the Rav Yoshua Baravidi Tiyufta. That can't be the explanation. Now, the question is, how does this Braita affect the entire idea that we've been talking about, and how do we make it fit with the Inyonim of Sukkah? So now, does this mean that it also shows that Rav Asi is wrong? Because, I mean, the Braita says, until he's six. And Rav Asi says, even if he is six, right? So that seems to be saying that Rav Asi is wrong. If we don't have the difference in Rav Yoshua Baravidi's pshat, says the Gemara, not necessarily, because the word until has two different meanings, ad ve'ad bichlal, or ad ve'lo ad bichlal. So says Rav Asi, what does this have to do with me? On the contrary, it's completely supporting me. When the Braisa says until he's six, it means inclusively. He's already six until he's six. Again, already six means he's in his sixth year, possibly, depending on how we're mafarish. That's usually the way Gemara means it. Okay, so therefore, it's certainly, there's no problem with Rav Asi. All right? How about Rabbi Yanai and Reish Lakish? Because Rabbi Yanai and Reish Lakish were the ones who were mafarish the Mishnah in Sukkah, and they were certainly not talking about somebody who is six. Is it Vikama? 4 or 5 years old. I mean, certainly a six-year-old doesn't need his mother to take him to the bathroom. And he certainly doesn't wake up and keep crying until mommy comes. So then that means that Rav Yanai and Reish Lakish are wrong. That can't be the definition of Tzorech Le'imo if we're ready to include over here Ad Ben Sheish. Because that would be, even if it's Ad V'lo Ad B'klal, it wouldn't make sense. Because once he's a Ben Chamesh, it's overs, according to Reish Lakish. Maybe even Ben Arba, right? So they don't make any sense in this Braita. Answers the Gemara a very important distinction. Where you're talking about the Sukkah, the one that's going to be bringing him into the Sukkah is the one who's responsible to be mechanech him in the Sukkah. That's Daddy-O, which means that Daddy-O is in town. Masha Inke, in the case of the Erev, the one who's going to be taking him places is Mamio. And that could very well mean that Daddy is not in town. And if he's not in town, then the question, of course, of his dependency on his mother changes. If his father is around, so then he's more independent, he's with his father. But if his father is not around, then Enoch Inami, even Rabbi Yanai and Reish Lakish would agree that the shear of dependent on mommy could extend longer than needing help in the bathroom or waking up and crying for mommy. So therefore, when we define the nature of dependency, it is defined according to the circumstances. So vis-a-vis the sukkah in Achinami, it's given as a granted that daddy is there. And therefore, he is independent earlier. When it comes to the Erev, then in Achinami could be Yodsei Be'erev Imo if there is no father. Tana Rabbana, once we're talking about making, how did this all begin? Because it all began with the Mishnah's insistence that the person has to consent before it gets dark. Fine, maybe that means al-yadei breira, that even if he gives his consent afterwards, it's as if he gave his consent before. But the entire point of the Mishnah is the consent form, so to speak, right? So then we started talking about, okay, how about those who don't even need an Erev, much less consent? Then we started talking about, okay, how about where we need to try to understand their state of mind so that we can assume the consent. That is to say, the child is the child of the father, or the child is the child of the mother, vis-a-vis his Erev. Then we get into another question. There may be places where you can actually create the Erev without the person's consent, even if they don't want, maybe. So turn around on it. A father or mother can be ma'arev ayadei b'no ubito haktanim. Al Yedei means for that purpose. So it means he can go ahead and he can make an Erev for his young child. He can also make an Erev for Avdo v'shivchato haknanim and for an Eved that he owns. because he has the right to define them. And over there, it doesn't matter if they consent, they don't consent. Bein ladatan, bein shelo ladatan, because he is the one in charge, and therefore it's his das that is going to be definitive. But you could not do that for an eved or a shivcha ivriim, because they are not yours, you don't own them, and therefore you do need his consent. And the same thing is true. Lo ayedei beno ubito hagidolim, velo ayedei ishto. You cannot define your adult child and say that I want you to be with me, because even though when we're talking about Eru v'chatzeres, we weren't worried about this because it's zochen olam shelo b'fana. But a tchum, Eru v'tchumim, could be a disaster for a person who wants to go somewhere else. And therefore, if he doesn't know about it and didn't consent to it, so then forget it. It's ein ma'arvim lo. And the same thing is true for his wife. He can't force his wife if that's not where she wanted to go visit her own parents in the other direction. She doesn't want his Eruv. Now, another brisa says, Tanya Idach, lo ya'arev adam al yedei beno bito hagdolim, v'yedei avdo v'shivchato ha'ivrim, v'lo al yedei ishto. So far, everything sounds good. Ela mida'atan. Aval me'arevu al yedei avdo shivchato ha'knanim, al yedei beno bito ha'knanim, ben leda'atan, ben shelo leda'atan. And so far, so good. And then look at this. We're going to add another little piece. The reason is because yadan arzki yado. So they're under his, so to speak, guardianship, and he defines things. And what's more, this is the new piece, kulan she'irvu, v'irav alehem rabban, yotzim b'shel rabban. So even if any of that, those groups, now that's what it sounds like, the second group, but we're about to show that there's a problem. So if any of these made their own Eruv, and the Rav of this Eved Ivri, let's say, he made an Eruv in a different direction. So then the halacha is they will go according to the Rav's and not their own, unless we're talking about his wife. Because his wife, she has the right to say, no, I don't want to go there. Mipnei she'yachola limchot. So I don't understand. Wife is no different. We had an entire set of people. Wife, b'no, Bito Hagdolim, Avdo, Shifchato Hakdanim, they were all originally part of a set. And in that set, we said we needed their consent. And then, I understand, then all of a sudden we say, if the wife made her own Eruv, so then she can refuse to take his Eruv, and well, the son and the daughter can't? They're stuck with his Eruv? Why is the wife any different than the other members of that set, like his Bino Bito Hagdolim or the Ivriim? Isha Maishna, Omar Rabba doesn't mean his wife. It means the set of those similar to his wife. Okay, but it still doesn't make sense. You say that the reason that the wife is different is because she can be mocha. She can say, I don't want that Erev, which implies that it's only because she says, I don't want it. But normally, if a guy would make the Erev and she didn't specifically protest, that the din would be that stama, she would be defined by her husband's Eruv. But the problem is that the Brisa said beferish that that's not true. The Brisa said you can only make an Eruv for that set, wife, b'no bito agdolim, avdo v'shivchato ivriim, if they agree, mida'atam. I'm assuming da'atam means they give their consent. They say yes. So why now are we making it dependent on, well, she could say, I don't want. What do you mean she could say, I don't want? She needs the consent. We don't assume automatically that she consented, do we? So my love, Damriin, says the Gemara, no. What we'll have to say is, what does the meaning of the words, quote, elamidatan, unquote, in the Reisha? It just means that they don't say anything. So if they don't object, so then the assumption is that they're going along with it, the ishtiku. But if they said no, lafukeich damri, no, I don't want it, then not. How could that be? Because in the Seifa of the Braita, what does it say? At the very end of the Braita, it says, in all cases where they made their own Erev, and the Rav went ahead and made an Erev for them, then they are able to be Yotze with the Erev of the Rav, and that's talking about a normal case, meaning they didn't say anything. V'stomahu, And it doesn't mean that they said, I don't want it. So what's going on? The only case that we said over there, it says, af al pi kein, the isha, and it says, according to Rabbah, this means any of them. This would not be true of any of the latter cases. It's only true of the former cases of the Eviknani or the children that are Ketanim. So when it says Chutz min Aisha or the others, who does not use the Erev of the father, even though she never objected. So first you say you need to object. And the Das means just you didn't object. And then you say, if you didn't object and you made your own Erev, tough on you, you have the other Erev unless you could have objected. So it means you didn't say anything. Says Rava, come on, man. If you made your own Erev, isn't that a pretty clear objection? I mean, Eilech HaMechag, Dol HaMizu. I understand. You say, I want to go to the north. I have to tell you, will you please get your Erev out of here? I don't have to say get your Erev out of here. I just have to make it very clear this is not where I want to go. And therefore, and if you didn't say anything, you didn't do anything, we can assume that shtika is that I'm going along. But, I mean, in this case, we certainly cannot assume that the shtika of the ben or the bat or the Yavad Ivri who makes an Erev in another direction means I'm going along. So therefore, the only time that we would say going along is if it was the first group, where the first group indeed is Yadan Ki Yado. Whatever it is that Daddy says or Rabban say, that's what they're going to have to do. Okay, now, we talked about putting that barrel of food and getting that food to everybody and waiting for them to sign their consent form, right? Now, Richie may have finally figured out what to press on his screen so that he can introduce the next Mishnah. What do you say, Sir Richard? No, because that's totally on Breira. And we just said over here, if you didn't even know how to do it, you can't use Breira, Lama Freya. So you're just going to have to give us a Halakha Commissioner. Unless, of course, Benny is willing to go all out. Okay. Go ahead. Sorry. Try that again, please. See, you put in the energy for two announcements into it. So it was as if you already said, Fakton the Halakha Perek. So now, Kamahi Shiuro. Okay. We've talked about the shiur in terms of the Erev Chatzeres. We talked about the shiur in terms of the Sheet of Mavos. We saw that over there, there's a sense of a communal shiur. And there's the minimum for individuals, but once we have a community, then it's a community meal. And that doesn't necessarily mean that there's enough for every party. Now, as I said before, when it comes to Eruvei Tchumim, that is a very individual thing. And over there, we actually do need a meal, meaning the meal for Shabbos, which is a minimum of two meals, and that we need for every individual. So that, in fact, is the shiur. Mizon shtei se'udot l'kol echad v'echad. It's enough for two se'udas for everyone. And when we say, remember how we defined this earlier, that it doesn't mean that you need the full se'uda, the cholent and the bread and the kugel and the kishke and the wine and so on. It means you select any one of those foods and you say, okay, how much of this would I need in a Suda of Shabbos? So this is Richie's old idea of using the grape juice. How much grape juice would I drink in the meal of Shabbos? Not so much. So basically I can get away with one bottle of grape juice for two meals, right?
Depends if you ask the man or the woman of the house.
Well, we're gonna see actually whether it goes according to you or it goes according to a norm. So over here it goes for everybody. And when we're talking about how much food, we mean how much food for a weekday meal, not how much food for your Shabbos meal, because again, we go lakula when it comes to Erevin. So says Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, on the contrary, we mean enough food for your Shabbos meal. Not for your weekday meal, but that's not because he thinks you need more food. It's that Rabbi Yehuda holds each Shabbos meal is smaller than a weekday meal for a very simple reason. Since you have to eat shalosh se'udas, Moshe, this is very important for you. Rabbi Yehuda says, since you eat shalosh se'udas, you eat less at each se'uda, not more at each se'uda. Did you get that? And therefore, The Seudas of Shabbos, a particular single Seuda of Shabbos, is less than the equivalent Seuda B'chol. Rabbi Meir, however, holds that since the food on Shabbos has a particularly good case, as we're going to see, good taste, as we see later, there's really no resisting, and therefore, in the end, you're going to eat more on Shabbos meals than you eat in the other meals, and your mind is not sufficient to tell you, don't eat this, I need to eat Shalosh this. And then, if you're like the few of us, the very few of us, when you get to Shalosh Shuddas, you can do the whole thing again. And if you're like the very, very few of us, when you then get to Mamalava Malka, you can double it. Okay, fine. So this was the Machlokas between Reb Yudit. It's not that there's a Machlokas about whether you go Lekula or Lechumra. Both Rabbi Meir and Reb Yudah are going Lekula. They're Mechavein Lahakel. Okay, now, according to this, what we're talking about is not a particular amount. I couldn't talk to you about a particular amount because, I mean, it's always different in terms of what food we're talking about. Plus, remember, we learned before that it's also dependent on the individual, so that we always look at the lesser amount. In other words, how much does the person making this meal, how much would making this Erev, how much would he eat? And if he's got a gigantic appetite, then how much would a normal person eat? So that would be the lower of which we said before. That would be the what we take as an assumption. Okay, so then that means that there is no particular amount of food, right? It turns out that that's a big machlokas. And that actually Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka comes to define the exact amount of food that you would be needing in terms of the utilization of bread. If you would be using bread, let me tell you precisely how much you would need. And the way to determine it, and we've talked about this particular shear before, that first determine the price of grain, and then figure out how much you paid for your loaf of bread, and that will tell you how big, how much grain is in that bread. Now, it's going to turn out, Rabosai, that this is a very primitive way of understanding Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Because in the end, what Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is referring to is not to simply divide the cost of wheat by the cost of the bread, but you need to take into consideration in the costs of what percentage of the loaf is going to be, the cost of the loaf is grain, what percentage is the labor costs involved in manufacturing, what percentage is the energy costs in manufacturing, and what percentage is the profit that needs to account for the overhead and so on of the baker or the grocer who's selling it, right? So obviously you can't determine, I mean, it's ridiculous to think that the amount of money that you pay for a loaf of bread is going to directly define the amount of grain in the bread. You need to know the percentages before you do that. But the Gemara takes Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka on his very simplistic level that, well, I mean, let's just talk about how much grain would be divided by, if we take a look at the how much a pundian is and how much the cost of the grain is per saw, then it'll turn out to be like this. So that if you buy one pundian of bread, when the cost of wheat is, you have four saw of the wheat or the, whatever grain it is per sella, then you will know how much you need to eat. So that would be, since a pundian is a 48th of one sella, and the same thing is true, that has four saw, we're saying, are a sella, so then, which is 24. So then that means that you were paying basically for a half of a kav. So when you pay with a pundian, you're purchasing a half a kav of grain, which of course is not true. But we're assuming right now that it's true. So then if you've got a half a kav, then you know that is enough for your meal. Rabbi Shimon Omer, no, that's way too much. It's actually, the amount of bread that you need is only 2/3 of a kikar where you would be able to have that kikar, you would be able to buy three, get three of those kikars in one kav of grain. So that's the way to look at it. So then let's imagine if 2/3 of this kikar is enough for the two meals that we're saying. So then that means that the entire thing, three-thirds, would be enough for three meals, right? So that means each third, according to Rabbi Shimon, the amount of bread that you need is divide that, the three to a kav, by three. So in other words, one-ninth of a kav, according to this, right? Which is the entire loaf over here is a third of a kav, is enough for three meals. Now, this is tremendously different, right? Because, I mean, Rabbi Yochanan was talking about where you've got the half of a kav, and he's talking about, I mean, the ninth of the kav. So how exactly they're using the measurements in such different ways. Everybody agrees that we've got a kikar. Now, how do we define what that kikar is? Okay, so what we're talking about over here, says Rabbi Shimon, is that what you need of this shiur is the amount for Erev. And once you establish the amount of Erev, you can also use that general definition of what a loaf is for two other inyanim. And that is, half of that size, meaning half of that loaf, is the amount that you would need to eat in a bayit menugah. Remember, you don't really need to eat, but you need the amount of time that you would stay in a bayit menugah eating that shear of wheat bread in order for you to become able to have everything that you came in with you, also that you're wearing and so on, to become tameh. And without that, we make the difference between things that you're wearing and things that you just bring into the bayit. Okay, so that's the shear for the bayit hamenugah. One half of a half, that means one quarter of the shear of that kikar, is the amount that you need for the din of psul gvia. Remember that psul gvia is a rabbanan invention in which if you eat a certain amount of food that is tame, even though food, of course, can never be metame an adam because it can never be an avatuma, but we make a gezerah that if you eat food that is tame, it is going to passel you from eating truma or kachin. And that's called psul gvia. How much would you need to eat in order to do that? You would need to eat a half of that half. Okay, meaning so one quarter of it. That's the shear that we call usually when we talk about the achilas pras. That's the pras that we mean. One half of the loaf. What's the loaf? The standard loaf. What defines a standard loaf? That's good for the machlokas over here in the Mishnah. What exactly is the standard loaf? Okay. So again, the nafka mina will be, you walk into the bayit hamenugah, or something is carried by you into bayit hamenugah, you become tummy, it becomes tummy. You walk into the bayit hamenugah wearing something, your clothes are not tummy, unless you sat down the amount of time to eat that shear. Okay, so now let's figure out how this works, okay? So kama mazon shtei su'udot, first of all, according to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, they don't say what mazon shtei sudot would be in terms of the bread. We have a very strange Mishnah in which people are talking past each other. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda don't even mention bread. They just talk about what you would normally eat along with the bread. And then we have Rabbi Yochanan and Ben Broka and Rabbi Shimon discussing what you would be eating if you're eating bread. How exactly does that tie into the first part of the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, who have the same shear, apparently, because they were both Mechav and Lekula? What would that be? Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, well, the amount, says Rav, according to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, of bread would be tarte rifta ikari yalta. So you have these farmer loaves, very simple kind of bread, or Ravada Barava says it's the equivalent of two of the Nahar Papa type of loaves that they eat over there. Again, we don't know exactly what that is, but in any event, that's how their shear would work. Rabbi Yosef asked Rabbi Yosef Berei de Rava. Now, this girsa does not make much sense. Because of that, we find over here that the Bach changes it. The Bach changes it because why would Rabbi Yosef be asking Rava's son what Rava, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Yosef, holds? It makes much more sense to say this is Rabbi Yosef bar Rabba. So Rabba had died before Rabbi Yosef, and there Rabbi Yosef would want to know, what did your father hold? So he asked Rabbi Yosef Berei de Rabba, Avuch Kaban Svirle, whose svara does your father hold of? Meaning, does he hold like Moshe Forman, which is that each meal on Shabbos has to be bigger? Or does he hold, like Rabbi Yehuda, that each meal has to be smaller? So he said he holds like Rabbi Meir. And said Rabbi Yossi, well, I got to tell you, I hold the same thing, and I'll bring you a raya. Ananami, I also think Rabbi Meir is right about this. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's very problematic. Remember, we have a popular saying. What's the popular saying? We had this, of course, in Megillah, that revokala besima shchiach. There's always room in your tummy for something that tastes particularly yummy. That's the saying. So if that's the case, since the food on Shabbos does taste particularly yummy, so then the assumption is there's always room in your tummy. And of course, we never know popular sayings to be wrong. So since that's the popular saying, it's clear that it's the halakha like Rabbi Meir, and that in fact, people are going to eat more on their Shabbos table. All right. Then we've got an analysis of the interrelationship of the Shira of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broncha and Rabbi Shimon, which is so weird because the Braita says, well, actually, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon's views are the same, almost. Krovim divrayim liyot shavim, which is outrageous. I mean, but remember, it's only outrageous because Rabbi Shimon was directly addressing the amount of grain in the loaf, and Rabbi Yochanan was addressing the amount of grain in terms of the money that you paid for the loaf, and we assumed that that was directly proportional to the cost of the grain, which was sort of a silly assumption, right? But so right now it strikes us as being, what? Me, dummy, it's absolutely, it's so far apart. According to Rabbi Yochanan, you work out with four meals in every kav. And according to Rabbi Shimon, you work out to nine meals in every cup. Because he said that two-thirds was sufficient for the meals. One-third was the one meal. Three-thirds, that means, would be all three suddas. That works out to one. That was a third of a cup. So that's nine suddas in a cup. I mean, that's a tremendous difference. Says the Gemara, well, we apparently didn't quite understand that we need to also allow for profit for the baker, right? So, Rav Chista, tzemi am shlish lechen vani. Okay, well, one-third, I mean, when you talked about a punyan, only two-thirds of the punyan is applied to the grain because one-third has to go to the baker. Says the Gemara, okay, let's even say that. Is there's an awful big difference between Rabbi Shimon, who comes out to nine, and even with this new way of calculating Rabbi Yochanan ben Broncha, he only gets six to the kav, even if we take off this 30%, right? This 33%. Oh, okay, you're right. But there's another Rav Chista, and in a moment we're going to ask, how does Rav Chista contradict himself? Rav Chista says only half of the actual payment is the amount that's applied to the grain. So take it by half. Oh, okay, by half, that's closer, but still different. According to Rabbi Shimon, you would be getting nine per kav, and according to Rabbi Yochanan, you would now be getting eight per kav. We thought before it was four, double it now because of the 50% off to the grocer. Okay, so you get eight per kav. Okay, fine, that's different, but we said they're krovim. The reason that we wanted to say that they're close is because we knew you were thinking wrong about this, and you were trying to directly translate the values into the amount of grain, which caused you to think that there's a big difference between them. So the writer wanted to make it clear. They're close. It's not that different. You start thinking to yourself, how did they get close? And that's when you realize that you need to take into consideration 50% off. Yeah, but what do you mean? I mean, isn't there a big difference between 50% and 33 and a third? I mean, how does Rav Chista in one place say take off a third? And how in the other place does he say you need a full half in order to cover the costs? Well, it's not a problem. Fuel costs are very high. So the energy costs, who is paying the energy costs? That's the problem over here. Now, there were different minhagim. There were places where the householder would pay for the energy. So therefore, when he came to the baker, he would present fuel. He would bring along wood for the oven with him. So if he's providing the tzivi, he's providing the pieces of wood for the oven, so then the prophet over there has only got to take into consideration his overhead for the store and the costs of labor to manufacture the bread. It doesn't have to take into consideration the actual energy costs. So over there, it's just one third. It's going to be the difference of the combined profit, overhead, labor. But if you're talking about adding the energy, and the Gemara said elsewhere, the energy costs are extremely significant. And it goes, that was the story of Yerushalayim. Remember that one of the storehouses was the energy storage. The other one was this food. The other one was this drink. And the Chachamim was Mishabeach, the one who could supply the energy, because that is so difficult. So the other case is talking about where it's the Balabayit that is Yoiv Tzivi, and Hadalo Yoiv Balabayit Tzivi. And that gives us the exact amount in which they're really Krovim Elu LaElu. And we also understand Rav Chista fully.